It's Wednesday, April 1st, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. We're glad you downloaded The Growing Truth About Cannabis today and encourage you to download us in the future. We want to start off by making a note about marijuana law reform in Big Sky Country. It appears that marijuana law reform is dead for this session in Montana, with decrim bills and medical marijuana expansion bills getting stymied at the committee level. However, the good news is that we did manage to stop some really bad bills that would have crippled the medical marijuana program in Montana, so all is not lost. We encourage everyone to check out Montana Patients Families United at mtpfu.org and Montana Normal at montananormal.org for more information on how to get involved with the reform fight in the future. Also came upon an interesting note in Scientific American, the magazine. This was about nuclear proliferation. The story is called A Radioactive Cut in the Earth That Will Not Stay Closed, and the opening sentence is, "A common joke among nuclear policy analysts is that the best way to move an atomic bomb across the national border would be to hide it inside a truckload of marijuana. In other words, smuggling routes used by average criminals provide good cover for the occasional piece of nuclear merchandise." Okay, that's funny. As Ngayo Bilam says, "My stuff is the bomb, but it's not a bomb." Also want to point you out to the front page of the Normal website at norml.org for our announcement of some change we can believe in coming from Senator Jim Webb, Democrat of Virginia, and Arlen Specter, Republican of Pennsylvania, along with 15 co-sponsors who've just introduced Senate Bill 714, the National Criminal Justice Commission Act of 2009. And the idea here is to establish a Blue Ribbon Commission to undertake a comprehensive review of the criminal justice system. And specifically, the commission will examine the current drug policy and its impact on incarceration, crime and violence, sentencing, and reentry programs. I want to encourage all of you to call your senator and tell them to support Jim Webb and Arlen Specter's SB 714. This could be the best way of getting to marijuana law reform at the federal level. Rather than attacking it as a legalization and a rights issue, we take a look at the harm that marijuana prohibition is causing, and the natural cure will appear obvious once the commission studies it, just as it did in the 72 Schaefer Commission. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines with a shocking April 1st headline to top off our news. In our cannabis science segment, we're visiting with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who's going to take a look at the effects of using both cannabis and alcohol together. Do they cause more problems? Do you get more messed up? We'll get the facts from Dr. Mitch. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, features some great reggae on Reggae Wednesday. And in our second interview, we go to Scandinavia, where we'll be speaking with Turkel Bjørnsen from Normal in Norway, a really fascinating discussion about the state of marijuana laws in Norway and the growing cannabis culture there. This podcast isn't dead, it's merely resting. It's just pining for the fjords. So get ready. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Former President Bush busted with 420 pounds of marijuana at the Mexican border. April 1st, 2009. The DEA and the Border Patrol, acting on an anonymous tip from an informant calling himself Tennessee Tuxedo, have arrested former President of the United States George W. Bush at the Texas-Mexico border crossing at Juarez for allegedly trafficking large amounts of marijuana. Border Patrol agents announced the seizure of 420 pounds of high-quality indoor hydroponic marijuana from a large Winnebago travel trailer driven by the 43rd President and his wife Laura as they attempted to cross the border into Mexico. According to the Border Patrol spokesperson, Lieutenant April Fools, agents became suspicious when the former president appeared groggy and unresponsive to their attempts to speak with the former world leader. Said Lieutenant Fools, quote, "Our agents were excited to meet Mr. Bush and quickly gained permission from attending Secret Service agents to approach the driver's side window of the Winnebago. Upon speaking with the president, however, our sharp-eyed agents noticed the telltale orange fingertips of a compulsive Cheetos habit. Mr. Bush's eyes were glazed and somewhat bloodshot, and he kept inviting agents into his Winnebago to listen to some killer jams from his band's new demo," end quote. Lieutenant Fools continued, quote, "Mrs. Bush also seemed out of sorts, giggling uncontrollably once she discovered one of our agents was named Harold Balls. We asked the former president and first lady to exit the vehicle, which they did, somewhat clumsily. Upon searching the Winnebago with drug-detecting canine units, we found the 420 pounds of contraband hidden in various professionally manufactured hidden compartments," end quote. Unlike the typical border seizure of Mexican brickweed coming into the United States, DEA noted the rarity of transporting quality American and Canadian marijuana into Mexico. Sergeant Ray L. Stadenko of DEA commented that, quote, "It appears the former president and first lady were headed to spring break in Cancun and had brought the quantities of marijuana along in an attempt to curry favor with the young Americans who flock to the Mexican resort destination. We found hastily scribbled plans on a Cheeto-stained 7-Eleven napkin entitled Operation Cool Ganja Dude, which detailed the ideas of distributing, quote, killer green buds to all the, quote, dudes and shorties attending spring break, so the students would find Mr. Bush, quote, gnarly," end quote. Federal and Texas state authorities released Mr. and Mrs. Bush on their own recognizance, but gave Mr. Bush an Xbox video game machine and a copy of the online collaboration shooter game, Halo, and asked him to, quote, "just chill out in Houston for a bit," end quote. The DEA and Border Patrol agents then took all 416 pounds of the marijuana and destroyed all 408 pounds of it by fire. It is not expected that authorities will file any charges against Mr. and Mrs. Bush for trafficking in 402 pounds of high-quality marijuana. The DEA is trying to identify the informant, Tennessee Tuxedo. The caller spoke with a southern accent and seemed to sigh often during his call. One clue that might aid in the search is that every time DEA said the former president's name, the caller would blurt out profanities, call him loser, and every so often he would mutter, "Effin' Scalia." Anyone with any information as to Tennessee Tuxedo's identity is asked to call the DEA at 1-800-APRIL-FOOLS. Connecticut Judiciary Committee votes to decriminalize marijuana. On a groundbreaking vote, the legislature's Judiciary Committee voted Tuesday night to decriminalize marijuana possession for adults 18 and older who have less than one half of an ounce of the drug. Under a compromise, the marijuana laws would not change for anyone under 18, and the amount that would be decriminalized was reduced from less than 1 ounce to less than one half of an ounce. The possession of small amounts would no longer be a crime and would instead be an infraction that could be paid like a speeding ticket. The bill passed by 24-14 in the Democratic-dominated committee, and the highest-ranking Republican who voted for the measure was Deputy House Republican Leader William Hamsey of Plymouth. Despite the positive vote Tuesday night, the bill still faces an uphill battle as Republican Governor M. Jody Rell opposes decriminalization. Rell had vetoed a bill 2 years ago that would have allowed for the use of marijuana for medicinal purposes to relieve pain. Rell's spokesman, Christopher Cooper, said Tuesday night after the vote, quote, "Whether it's a little or a lot, it is an illegal substance, and the governor does not support the bill," end quote. It's pretty incredible that law reform can progress through such an arduous path, only to likely die at the hands of a prohibitionist governor. Why should one person thwart the will of the people as expressed through their elected officials? The article clearly illustrates that more and more elected officials are basing their positions on fact rather than personal beliefs and outright fiction. One state official noted that a person driving 80 miles per hour on a state parkway would get a bigger fine than someone possessing 15 joints. The reply from another state official was that the speeder was a greater danger to those around them than someone with weed. Common sense prevails. Nutmeggers, don't be held hostage to the whims of a prohibitionist. Governor Rell's position is not fact-based, it's morality-based. That sort of guidance is best received from your family and faith, not a state governor. Why not take a moment and share that thought with Governor Rell? Visit our post at stash.normal.org, where we've got links to Governor Rell's contact information. Maryland patients urge legalization of medical marijuana, say Compassionate Use Act provides false security. When a police officer asked her what she was doing behind a van in the park, Pamela Hughes told him the honest truth. Quote, "I said I was smoking a cannabis cigarette," end quote, she said. She presented the stunned policeman with a written recommendation from her doctor and a copy of Maryland's Compassionate Use Act, which reduces the penalties for possession of medical marijuana. Hughes ended up spending several hours in jail. She fought the charges and won, but only after a lot of time, stress, and money, three things that her fibromyalgia, a chronic condition characterized by widespread pain and fatigue, and a reoccurrence of stage 4 cancer, were already monopolizing. Hughes and several other patients told the House Judiciary Committee last week that while Maryland's Compassionate Use Act was a step forward for its time, the law merely provides them with a false sense of security. The patients testified on behalf of a bill that would establish a task force to evaluate the effectiveness and fairness of the current law and consider whether medical marijuana should become legal in the state. They said medical marijuana provides relief for certain ailments in ways no other medication can replicate. No one testified against the bill, and a vote on the legislation has not been scheduled. Free State Stashers know what time it is? Contact your Maryland officials. I'd especially like to see folks write to the Judiciary Committee Chairman, Joseph Valerio Jr., a Democrat from Prince George's, who said, quote, "How can you pass something that's against federal law? That really is the bottom line," end quote. Well, because, Chairman Valerio Jr., the federal law is wrong and should be abolished. The law makes criminals out of sick people, and that is wrong. Sometimes the best answers are the simplest ones. We Are Legion. Commentary by Mr. Spoff and Radical Russ. This would only be news to prohibitionists and folks that think marijuana legalization would encourage everyone to use it. We already are. We're just in the closet. Here's some posts from folks in Andrew Sullivan's article in The Atlantic that he just wrote called The Cannabis Closet. I'm 41 years old and a contract manager with a government agency, treasurer for the PTA, father of two active boys. The funny thing is, I'm only in the closet professionally and where the parenting thing makes it an issue. Most of my friends, who are also professionals, are in the same position as me. We work hard, handle our business, and see no logical reason why this particular drug should be not just illegal, but as heavily stigmatized as it currently is. I'm a 25-year-old married man, college graduate, eventual grad school student. Got a good stable job working with my father, active in my church, an all-around nice guy. I also enjoy marijuana in moderation. It does not make me lazy. I do not have to have it. I only do it on one or two nights a week, but I enjoy it. It makes the nights I do it all the more enjoyable. It adds zest to life. I am a lover of film and music, and it makes my viewing and listening all the more life-affirming. At first, I kept it on the hush, but I am becoming more outspoken about my use of it. I have the luxury of not being drug tested, so I figure I might as well do my part in chipping away at the stereotypes cast upon marijuana users. There's more in the article, so check them out. Remember, you're not an anomaly or unusual in your marijuana use. There are millions of us, and we're waking up to realize we are strong and our voice counts. Clothes and shoes go in closets, not responsible adult marijuana consumers. If you'd like to share why you are a marijuana consumer with us, just email us at stash@normal.org. Or as I pointed out in an earlier stash, there are 25 million Americans who admitted to smoking marijuana in the past year. Remember, that's admitted to when asked on a government survey. That means there are more occasional tokers in America than Texans, more bong hitters than black adults, more dope smokers than diabetics. 14 million of us admitted to smoking marijuana in the last month. That means there are more regular fatty puffers than factory workers, more average stoners than Asian Americans, and more sativa fans than 60 Minutes fans. 3.1 million of us are estimated to smoke nearly daily. That's more real stoners than Red Sox fans who attended a game in 2008, more chronic marijuana smokers than Mormons, and twice as many potheads as new cancer cases per year. If everyone who smokes pot suddenly found their skin turning green, you'd be stunned at how many green people you know and never suspected were marijuana users. We are not alone.
We are Legion.
There were 765,000 marijuana arrests in 2007. That's not for dealers and kingpins, no, that's just for simple possession. Multiply that by the average cost of each arrest, and what have you got? $7.6 billion spent on people just smoking some pot. That's enough money to buy health insurance for every child that needs it. That's enough cash to adopt every stray dog and enough left over to feed it. Mr. Obama, I kinda wrote this song for you. You got my vote for change. Now let's see what you can do.
Visit normal.org today. Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid, and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science. Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we talk a lot about the social use of cannabis by responsible adults. But another thing that a lot of responsible adults like to use is alcohol. And there could be a lot of concerns about the use of both marijuana and alcohol together. So to talk about it, of course, is our own Dr. Mitch Earlywine from the University of Albany. So University of New York at Albany, excuse me. So welcome back, Dr. Mitch.
Oh, thanks so much.
So what is the latest data regarding the use of marijuana and alcohol? Does one cause a worse reaction with the other?
Well, it's intriguing. We've seen some new data coming out just trying to compare the use in teens, and it's looking pretty convincingly that binge drinking, heavy alcohol use in the teen years is markedly worse than cannabis use in the teen years. Again, we're not recommending cannabis use for folks in their teens either, but it's really clear that parents should be much more concerned about binge drinking than cannabis. This is an interesting set of studies that came out of the San Diego Joint Program and basically looked at brain structure, and there aren't a whole lot of changes, but brain function, reactions with brain waves and difficult tasks really do get out of whack a little bit with cannabis, and pretty dramatically with teens who drink, say, more than 20 drinks a month. It's particularly the case that the binges, those over four or five drinks in a single episode, seem to have a big impact on the teen brain. And in truth, even in adults, my friend Sarah Jo Nixon has shown some of that research as well. But then it's the stuff I'm getting asked about a lot is mixing the two, and it's not something I can really recommend as a home game, in part because each alcohol and cannabis each has its own set of effects in dramatically different neurotransmitter systems and creates combination effects that you wouldn't anticipate from either one. Scott Lucas at Harvard has data from, I guess back in 2001, suggesting that alcohol basically changes the way THC is absorbed. It may make it actually get absorbed more rapidly. So folks who have cannabis and alcohol in their systems at the same time report markedly more dramatic effects and seem to have higher blood THC levels when they have alcohol in their systems too. It's unfortunate that when I report this, a lot of folks think, "Oh, there's a way to save money on my cannabis bill." But I'm really trying to say, let's just use one of these at a time. Sarah Smucker, who you guys know, who's my former student at USC, has two publications now with me and my wife showing that folks who drink a lot and use a lot of cannabis are markedly more likely to show dependence symptoms than folks who smoke that exact same amount of cannabis. So clearly something's going on with the simultaneous use of these substances that seems to run into problems that you wouldn't get if you only used cannabis. And, the bottom line is chapter in Pot Politics by Tony Liguori also suggests that the impact on driving with cannabis alone may not be all that dramatic, but mixing even a small amount of alcohol, his data suggests even 0.04 or less, so just two beers literally for a 160-pound guy, would be dramatically impairing in a way that neither one by themselves would be.
That idea that the use of the alcohol might exacerbate the cannabis effects, wasn't that something also that you had found with the mixing of cannabis and tobacco in blunts?
And it's interesting because the respiratory symptoms that are associated with that seem to be markedly worse, both in folks who use blunts, folks in European countries where they're accustomed to mixing tobacco with their cannabis, and even folks who just happen to smoke cigarettes and smoke cannabis. There's also this habit that Dunlap's crew down in New York City is suggesting is folks who roll blunts tend to have cigars around and smoke a blunt and then do what they call blunt chasing, and they're like, "Oh, well, gee, I got a cigar right here, I might as well smoke it." And it seems like that habit may really put you at risk for respiratory symptoms that you certainly wouldn't get if you were just smoking cannabis.
We've talked before about the potential for dependency with cannabis and some studies showing that about 9% of the people do end up with some sort of clinical dependence. But we also find that, of course, the dependence rates for alcohol and tobacco are much higher. With regard to treating alcoholism and people that do have a serious problem with alcohol, does the use of cannabis mitigate that or exacerbate that? Or is there any studies showing any use of medical marijuana to help people recover from alcoholism and other addictions?
I have a very vocal subset of folks who are basically dying to be the case studies written up showing how basically cannabis saved them from really debilitating alcoholism. But the, 12-step and disease model crew is so strong here in the United States that those kind of data are really controversial to get out there. And the idea that, somehow publishing something like this is so difficult makes me, concerned that we may be missing out on something. It's curious because the idea of using one psychoactive to essentially alleviate problems with another is so controversial in the U.S. as long as there are things that are freely available. But we've got new data on modafinil helping folks with cocaine addiction and like pharmaceutical stimulants to, you know, to help folks addicted to illicit stimulants. So I'm a little stunned why this has turned into such a big deal under these circumstances. Once in a while, somebody will get a finding that suggests that, you know, modest intermittent cannabis use doesn't necessarily lead to relapse in abstinent alcoholics. But unfortunately, it's completely impossible to dispute these ideas that people raise, that they're saying, oh, well, in 2 more years, they're going to be drinking again. You know, it's just, you know, you'd have 10-year follow-up data and they'd say, oh, it's going to happen the very next day.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one to argue against.
So this speaks then to somewhat of the culture of addictionology and this idea that, like you mentioned, this disease model here in the United States. Is this something that's also seen worldwide, or do they have different ways of looking at alcoholism and treatment?
Because in Eastern Europe, of all places, where, you know, almost everyone drinks, the notion of getting over an alcohol problem doesn't even necessarily mean abstinence to them. So a lot of those folks will say, yeah, now I use cannabis and I never drink more than 2 drinks. And I'm completely behind them. I can't imagine why they would lie about something like that. But here in the States, if you bring something like that up, they either say that person was never alcoholic in the first place, which, you know, makes for this circular argument that you can't get around, or, you know, they just don't believe me. And they again say, well, that guy's going to relapse tomorrow and you just don't know it.
Wow. Now, looking back to the teen usage we were talking about earlier regarding marijuana and alcohol, lately, has there been much change in the teen perceptions of marijuana or its dangers, or are the teens getting this message about mixing the marijuana and the alcohol?
It's curious because this is one that hasn't hit home the way some of the other messages about each of these has. I would love to, you know, see ONDCP put something like this out and make these points more dramatically. Two of my students just came up to me yesterday and claimed they heard a radio advertisement sponsored by ONDCP that was just, you know, literally the same old lies we've been hearing since John Walters' days. And I'm hoping that we see some improvements along those lines. You can imagine a public service announcement that said, hey, you know, definitely do not mix psychoactives. I can't imagine that, you know, folks wouldn't respond well to that. The problem is it implies that you might actually be able to use one on its own without a lot of negative consequences. And of course, that's not something we're allowed to say.
Yeah. As we look forward to the eventual end of adult marijuana prohibition, of course, at some point, someone's going to have to set a regulation and set some sort of age restriction on this. What would you see as being a smart idea for an age restriction considering this marijuana and alcohol problem? Should we set the marijuana age at 21, or if we set it at 18, would we perhaps get more people away from alcohol?
Right now, the data we have suggests that as far as brain function and IQ changes, 18 is where that research has drawn the line in the past. I feel like, at least in the U.S., we're so accustomed to 21 being the national age for alcohol that that's a model that people can sort of stomach. In truth, if you look at the alcohol literature, the age should probably be about 24. So you can imagine what kind of uproar there would be trying to enforce a law that said, okay, never mind, now people can't drink until age 24. But again, the key is going to be moderation, as it is with any substance. If, you know, you're unlikely to drink for a man 14 drinks a week or more, or for a woman 7 a week or more, spread out over the week, not all in one big binge, odds are high you're not going to really have any negative consequences unless you're at risk for alcohol problems and sort of catch yourself sneaking in these extra ones all the time. And a lot of folks, you know, really drink without negative consequences from age 21 on. And even, you know, underage drinkers in college who, you know, we do see a lot of problems with them, but, you know, literally 80% of college student drinkers really don't have any negative consequences other than, you know, one of those early drinking hangovers that they experience when they're first sort of learning their own limits.
Hmm. Well, it's an interesting subject and one that I know applies to lots of people out there who use cannabis and also like to have a beer or some wine or maybe even a mixed drink from time to time. It's good that we get the facts out there, and it's not to say that anyone's anti-alcohol or pro-marijuana. We just want to make sure everyone's well-informed, and we thank you for coming here and getting us the latest facts.
Oh, I think you can be pro both of these, but just, be mindful that the combination is markedly more dramatic than either one by itself.
That's right. We all love Mentos. We all love Diet Coke. But when you put them together.
Exactly.
Well, thanks, Dr. Earlywine, for joining us here on The Stash for Cannabis Science.
Thanks again.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. This week we've heard from international artists, and today is no exception. Reggae Wednesday brings us Ja Rastafarian by Mamacita from Italy. Mamacita's style is elegant, original, and passionately energetic music. They mix reggae with ska, rumba, salsa, blues, and rock to create successful Italian pop music. Following the popularity of the band's first hit single, Mamacita released a CD which was published internationally and appeared on radio and TV. Mamacita have performed at many concerts and an MTV event. The band recently released a new single which is being used for a TV advertisement. They are preparing for their second CD's release in winter of 2009. Check out myspace.com Mamacita Band to keep updated about Mamacita. And registered stashers can get an MP3 download of this tune that was nominated in the 2008 Global Marijuana Music Awards. It's Mamacita with Ja Rastafarian.
So blue every day, yeah. I and I catch a fire at my spliff. Great job. When my prison became my solar, dark solar. I and I catch a fire at my spliff. Great job. Cha, Rastafarian. Rastafarian, break it. Cha, Rastafarian. serpent inferior. His Majesty, Low Majesty, Haile Selassie, I love the Jah Kingdom. So we are one love, one heart. Smoke since me lad, because smoking cigarettes is really dangerous. Smoke since me lad.
No longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana, and over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our NORML Daily Audio Stash, Cannabis Conversations. In my job here with the NORML Daily Audio Stash, I get to talk to people from all over the United States and Canada who are fighting for an end to adult marijuana prohibition. But every now and then, I get to speak to people outside of the North American continent, and this is probably one of the places I never thought I'd be speaking to, but I've got Turkel Bjørnsen from NORML in Norway, or Norway NORML, on the phone. So, Turkel, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Normal Norway, let's get people some information about your group. If they wanted to find out about you, where on the internet would they go to?
That's normal, with an A, .no, but unfortunately, all the information there is only available in Norwegian.
Well, we'll see if we can coax any English-speaking, Norwegian-speaking listeners to your website. Now, as we look at Norway, up in, you know, Scandinavian countries up there, what is it like as far as the marijuana culture? Is this something that's fairly new to Norway, or have Norwegians been attuned to this for a long time?
No, the phenomenon, it came with the hippies in the 1960s, and marijuana use have been steadily increasing in Norway until the year 2000, where it kind of flattened out. The latest statistics from Oslo, the capital, says that 48% percent of the male young population have tried the cannabis, so it's widely used.
So what are the drug laws like in Norway with respect to the personal use of cannabis? Is it tolerated like it is in the Netherlands, or is it more strict like what they're doing in the UK?
It's more strict than the Netherlands. The really bad thing about the Norwegian laws is that they don't discriminate between cannabis and hard drugs.
Mm.
But in practice, here in the main capital, you probably would get a fine for about, let's see, at 300 euros if you possess less than 15 grams for your own use. So you don't get to prison, but you get a criminal record if you are caught.
Mm. So it's not exactly decriminalized. It's more like a large fine and a record then.
Yeah, but there are some work going on, and the police association in Oslo, they wanted to not decriminalize, but they want us to get a fine. Now, not a criminal record, but you just pay there and then, and it's over. So I think it's probably going to be a more lenient law in the future, but yeah, not right now, unfortunately.
How are countries neighboring Norway with respect to drug laws? I've heard reports that Sweden was pretty pretty strict.
Yeah, Sweden, it's much more strict than Norway. In Denmark, you have had Christiania, the place where you can just go and buy hash or marijuana, if you like, but the Danish government has been more strict the last 5 years. So I will say Norway and Denmark are kind of the same, and Sweden is much more strict. And in Iceland, you can get expelled from the country if you are a tourist and smoking. So they are very, very hard and... Yeah, stupid laws.
So we have Norway and Denmark, which seem to be a little more tolerant, and Sweden and Iceland that seem to be more strict. Is there any real difference in how many addicts or problems with drugs that they have in those countries?
Sweden have a big problem with amphetamine, a problem you don't find in Norway, and I don't think you find it in Denmark either. So that might be something to do with it, and the statistics, you know the word.
It's statistics, yes.
A lot of fewer people in Sweden are smoking than in Norway and Denmark.
Hmm.
But that might be because the laws are much more strict. The people are afraid to answer yes on the so-called anonymous questionnaires.
Hmm. Now, Norway is fairly far north. Does that cause any problems for your marijuana growers up there?
It's kind of impossible to grow outside. Then you have to put out the small plants because the summer is so short that to complete the cycle. There are lots of very, very good indoor grown weed here in Norway, at least in Oslo. So there are,
That's great. I imagine it would have to be largely an indoor growing population up there, as close to the Arctic Circle as you might be. I'm also wondering.
Just one thing, if you go further north, up in the country, the prices is much, much higher. The quality is worse, and it's much more harder to get. So it's a long, long country. So
yeah, that's understandable. Now, I'm wondering, culturally speaking, with you mentioned how marijuana culture kind of came to Norway in the 60s and the hippie movement. What is it like now in Norway among the people who use cannabis? Is this a fast growing, a large culture? Do you get a lot of exposure in your media and in other ways, in the news and such?
I wouldn't say it's very, very much exposed. It goes up and down, but there are if you watch Norwegian television shows and so, they are regularly referencing the cannabis movement, and there are a lot of debate about whether cannabis should be decriminalized or not. It is if you come to Oslo, it's not hard to find a group or a cultural group where cannabis is enjoyed. But if you have a serious job, it wouldn't be wise for you to tell on the television that you're smoking. And if you are a politician and say you want to decriminalize, then your political career is over. So it should be more open to discuss than. And so, but we are not there yet.
Well, that's why we need people like you up in Norway that are pushing for the discussion.
And others.
Now, in America, we have a lot of celebrities, or at least a few celebrities, who are almost synonymous with marijuana. Like we would think of Willie Nelson or someone like Woody Harrelson, for example. Is there a Norwegian example of a celebrity who's just synonymous with marijuana, or does that really happen?
There are no celebrities I know that really smokes and have come forward with it, but there are some celebrities who have gone out against the prohibition and say, honestly, like they like marijuana should be decriminalized. We have a Norwegian actor, Kristoffer Joner, who plays in about half the Norwegian movies the last 5 years. He's sensible and a pro guy. And of course, the musicians are well the most people who talks like, the musicians are the people that are less afraid to stand forward and say, I smoke, I think it should be decriminalized. But there are much more of those kind of elements in America than in Norway.
Well, that's interesting. Now, I do have one last thing I wanted to bring up, this kind of on a personal note. I have friends, I'm calling you from Portland, Oregon, and I have friends that live up in Astoria, Oregon, which has a fairly actually large Finnish and Norwegian population. And I was wondering if you would, and there's people up there that speak Norwegian. I was wondering if you could deliver them the legalization message in native Norwegian to tell them that we need to legalize marijuana.
Okay, I will do that now. Hi, alle i Astoria, Oregon. Jeg Torkil i Normal, og jeg skal fortelle dere at her i Norge så ønsker vi å avkriminalisere cannabis for voksne, fordi et forbud skader mye mer enn det gjør godt. Og forbudet rett og slett ulogisk. Ha det bra. Okay, that was it.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Terkel Bjørnsen is with Normal Norway. You can find them on the web if you read Norwegian at normal.no, and that's with the A in it?
Yeah.
NORMAL.NO. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with some reminders from our activist agenda, available online at stash.normal.org/agenda. We start with tonight in Texas, Austin, Texas, Texas Normal Open Meeting happening tonight in Austin. Check out texasnormal.org for details. The statewide Michigan Normal meeting takes place this Friday. Again, check Michigan Normal, MINORML.org for details. And Saturday, the 37th annual